But today, we're very busy. Mayor John Hamilton joins us every Tuesday, so I've got to hop on the 7 line, slide down to Morton, into the Showers Plaza, which is now the Fernandez Plaza, knock on the door of City Hall, and there's our great friend, the mayor, John Hamilton, joining us today. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks. Hope you and all your listeners are well.
As I spoke with Dr. Jeff Hoswell, the superintendent of the MCCSC, earlier today, you know, we're not talking about we're going to have to add days to the school year or, you know, how are we going to deal with this when this big storm hits? I mean, it has to help the city's budget a little bit if you're not putting all this extra labor and product to keep the roads clean. So that I guess that's good news.
We do appreciate it. I don't know if we appreciate it as much as, as he does, and the students and families and all who deal with those complicated school responses. But we are pleased, and it means we can just keep doing potholes and street paving and accessibility ramps and all that instead of plowing streets. So we like that.
Excellent. Sunshine always makes us feel good. It makes us think of warmer climes and times and everything else. And just kind of thinking out loud, when is the council going to either move along with closing off portions of Kirkwood for parklets and outdoor dining? Is this this week or next week for that?
Oh, you're right. That's coming right up.
I don't remember either.
This week or next week?
I think it is next week, but it's on the horizon. So people were out saying, "Hey, you know what? Boy, it'd be nice to do this and do that outside." Well, the legality of it has not been enacted yet. Correct?
I think they pushed it for a couple weeks, didn't they? The last time, and I think that was 2 weeks ago, so it should be tonight, I think.
All right.
Well, I mean, tomorrow night. Sorry. Wednesday night, yeah.
Well, I'll make sure that Mary Catherine Carmichael gives us a full update when she joins us on Thursday.
So or corrects her mayor if he got it wrong. Either way.
Well, these things happen. I tell everybody, I've got baseball on in the background. I'm watching spring training. It's down in Florida. The sun's out. It's warm. Everybody's got their Florida clothes on. There have only been 23 perfect games in the history of baseball. That's been going on since the 1870s. So we're not getting
good reminder.
Perfect's not happening. Just
good reminder.
There we go. You were busy last Thursday. We talked to Mary Catherine before she was heading over to meet everybody at the Waldron, the John Waldron Arts Center. Your partnership in the city using that. Well, there was a big comedy show, I guess, at the Buzzcreek Chumley. So you had a shift over there. But the night of the state of the city, your eighth and final one or seventh and final one. You had the singing, the dancing, the entertainment, the arts, everything going on. Give me a recap of how it went.
Well, the venue was terrific. We had a really nice time. We had a reception for an hour before with wonderful music, including reimagining opera for kids, some singers on the steps doing some opera, and then some pianists and other folks, along with refreshments. And then between 7 and 8, or maybe a little past 8, I might have gone a little over, we had spoken word poets. We had a beautiful video by Justin Crossley, and then I gave my lecture, my State of the City status, which we can go into if you want. And then after that, we had another round of refreshments and desserts and a taco truck outside and a pianist. It's a beautiful venue, and it was really a lot of fun. It worked very well.
Well, I know you guys like to show that off, so that is fantastic to get out there and do all that. And in the tenor, we talked about going into it, and you were very good by not sneaking out too much information on what was going to happen. And I've asked, and I'll ask you again, how long was the process of putting this together? And what did you end up coming up with that you would like to highlight?
Well, thanks for asking. You know, it's months that you really think about this kind of thing because it is an annual. That was my eighth and final, as you said, State of the City. And I really tried to do a couple, three main things. I wanted to thank all of my colleagues and all the partners who've done so much. So we did have kind of a session of really highlighting the 16 cabinet members and people from my office, and called each one up and did kind of a fist bump and a highlight reel with some pictures. And I got hoarse because I was yelling about things. it had a soundtrack with it, you know, so it was kind of fun. We also did want to, you know, look back and talk about those accomplishments a bit, but I didn't want to spend too much time on it. So those two things, thanking people and kind of reiterating where we've been, were important. Great progress and state of the city being strong. And then I probably spent an equivalent amount of time really looking forward about four areas that I thought were really a big challenge for the city, where we need to We're going to have to keep changing. Change is important. Change is hard, but we've got to do it, and we may need to do a lot of this alone. And the four areas were really being a climate leader. I said the state is not going to be a climate leader, but we need to be, and that's leaning into our investments in the Climate Action Plan, our investments in public transit. I tried to get people to imagine, what if Bloomington had transit like a New York or a Washington, D.C. or a London, or think about big cities where it's so pervasive, and what if we were a small city that had transit like that? And we could be, and how cool that would be if we were America's best small city transit experience. Number two was about just continuing our jobs growth. We've had $3.5 billion of investment and thousands of new jobs and investments in trails and quality of life, and just kind of saying we have to keep the pedal down, working with IU. The provost was there. I thanked him. And third was about housing, affordable housing, the need to continue to make Bloomington work for people. I did throw out a notion. We right now, I won't ask you, I don't get to quiz you, but our three-county metropolitan statistical area has about 190,000 people in it. That's Monroe, Owen, and Greene. I said we have room for 250,000. That's 30% growth. We should really think about doing that and managing that well. We have a great quality of life. We have jobs. We want to welcome more people. So that was kind of a challenge. And then the last point I challenged people about was public health and criminal justice reform. Investing in public health and really doing good criminal justice reform. And I said, we have the money for it. We just need the political will. So let's go.
That was going to be my question for you, because everything comes with the price tag, and you mentioned perhaps on climate change and some of these other issues that perhaps the state is lagging behind in some of these areas. How does a city moving forward financially, is it more taxes? Is it reallocation of funds? How do you envision this happening?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I said when I got into this is I'm going to speak not like an aspiring mayor, but a retiring mayor. So watch out, you know. But look, even with the new taxes, which were so important and helped us fund so much, which I won't go into all of that, but really, really important for moving our city forward, even with those new taxes, if you compare the local income tax rate, which is really the main thing we can control, we are the second lowest of the seven counties. Looking at all our six ring counties and us, we're the second lowest of all of them. So we have, and we have plenty of bonding capacity, too, in terms of our abilities. And this is true in a low-tax state, in a low-tax country, when you look around the world and the country. So we really do have fiscal capacity. And I kind of made the case that government investments in public education, in public health, in infrastructure, in retirement, and in unemployment, all these public investments are what made America move our middle class the way we have. And we need to be ready locally to do that too, on these issues of jobs, on the issue of climate, on the issue of housing. We have the capacity to do it, and public health. I kind of said we need to step up. Now this will be. We're not going to do a lot in the next 10 months on this, but I just wanted to put the marker down that the community needs to continue to reach and aim high.
Did you have any I know that I prodded and put, did you have the big announcement there? Whether you told me it was not going to be anything personal, that's for sure. But was there anything that we haven't really been had on the radar that you brought up on Thursday?
We did. The one new thing I talked about, and this will become much more detail in a couple, 3 weeks, is the idea of a waste-to-energy conversion at a wastewater plant. And what that basically means is taking a whole bunch of organic waste, food waste, compostable waste, and turning it into methane gas that we then use to run the plant. And we just had a report initially come out. It will be fully released to the public shortly. But it suggests that a major investment to basically recycle and reuse compostable material from even a big 50-mile radius around us could be financially feasible and could really make a huge impact on our climate profile. The single largest energy user in the county is the Dillman Road wastewater plant. And if we could get that off the grid, that would be amazing. So we're looking at that.
Interesting. Very interesting. And again, moving things forward, not the way we used to do them. the new ways of getting it moved forward. The mayor is John Hamilton. He is our guest today. The countdown, well, it's not, the countdown's not on, but we're going to have a primary here before we know it in, two months? Gee whiz. So that's very real moving forward. And some of the other things that we have been following, there is a new CIB here locally, and you've put together some big local hitters on that board. Mary Catherine Carmichael gave me some inside info last Thursday, but obviously these are your appointments, so I want to hear from you. There's your old buddy Mick Renheisen back to work. He couldn't stand that retirement. Hanging out in all his fun places. Now he's going to get back at it. All right. Tell me what this board is going to do and why you chose some of these outstanding community members to be on it.
We've been talking for some months about a potential nonprofit that's kind of a partner to city administration. We're doing a lot of big projects that are a lot of work, that are unusual in that they're not our core business. You can think about the Hopewell development, which is one of those. You can think about the Trades District is another, maybe the Arts. But I almost have to add, I've had to add some staff, but these projects take a lot of energy from the city. They're tens of millions of dollars of investment, and we need to do them right. And we've thought about, and I have now activated, using a nonprofit to help be a community engagement in moving these really big projects forward. So particularly for Hopewell, you know, we've talked about that a bunch. It's been going on for many years, but it's going to go on for many more years. And this group of Mick Renheisen, former deputy mayor, Valerie Pena, who's a high-ranking IU person, plus she used to run the Convention Visitors Bureau, so very active in downtown development. John West, a real estate guy, and has been involved in the Hopewell Project from the beginning. And Sarah Bowerly Dansman, who's on the Redevelopment Commission. Those are four people I put in to help think about this. And we'll be meeting for the first time Friday, so getting organized. Probably talking mostly about Hopewell and how to move that forward. I'm excited. These are really talented people. They probably need to get staffed up with some help. And it really is a way to work in parallel with us as we continue to do our daily business that you hear about all the time, that to help us have a foot on the pedal that moves these big projects forward.
Yeah, you can't spread everybody too thin with 10 jobs and expect to have peak performance. I think that's probably a way of looking at it. But what I don't want to get confused about, look out, I'm going to get confused again. we've also heard about a CIB for the Convention Center project. This is not the same thing?
This is not a capital improvement board is a formal state-defined entity that the county creates, and that's not what this is. This is an independent 501c3 that we've established. You know, we've discussed before, I think this 501c3 would do a great job on the convention center, but so far the county hasn't agreed with that, and the county could, they could create a CIB separately for that, and we'll see what happens in that regard.
So I don't want to cross the streams. I'm glad I didn't. You saw what happened in Ghostbusters when that went on, and none of it was any good. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest checking in today. And, well, let's get to a big decision in the annexation world. You learned this after your State of the City speech. Was there any annexation talk in that about the growth and expansion and anything else? Because I think Friday was the decision that ruled in favor of the city.
That's right. I did not really talk much about annexation in the State of the City. I still think it's really important for the future of the city, but didn't get into it that night. It's really in the courts in two different proceedings, and we were very pleased Friday to get an important agreement with the city that the lawsuit that is looking at the west side areas 1A and 1B, those are the big areas on the west side, we are trying to get to what should be a trial on the merits, like, is this a good idea to annex this? Is it appropriate or not? Which we want to get to, and we're confident that a court will say, yes, you did the right things, and you followed the procedures, and it makes sense. You have a good plan. Before that, there was a lawsuit claim that said we need another 90 days to do another remonstrance period, and the court said, no, you don't. The city did the right thing. The pandemic didn't mean people couldn't do this. The hundreds of them did. And so that was really important to move it forward. and we look forward to that trial getting going as soon as we can to get it resolved. And then the second thing happened just yesterday. I think we filed our summary judgment motion. That's the asking the court to rule the 2019 waiver, remonstrance waiver elimination law that the state passed. We asked them to declare that unconstitutional, like the 2017 law that stopped the whole annexation. So that litigation's going, those two things in parallel track.
Did the decision Friday influence the decision yesterday?
No, not really. We've had the two cases. The timing's a little bit kind of random, but it lets us move forward. One case is very specific about the facts of the annexation on the ground on the west side, the 1A, 1B. The other case is very legalistic and constitutional about the propriety of the state law. And they're both important, and I think we'll win both, though I'm not sure. And they'll both be proceeding through the courts.
And I know the answer to this question, I think, but this goes on until what happens?
Well, the litigation, we really need to resolve what our borders are, and both these cases are important for that. And in my view, they will go on to, they're both, you know, appropriate and kind of normal litigation. When you have a conflict between laws or parties, you get the court to tell you what the rule is, and we'll just wait till we hear from the courts.
And that's all we can do. And again, if appeals in that process continue, that somebody has to file those and do all that correct. So
yeah,
you have no control over that. I know.
I can't, though. You know, it is frustrating when I wasn't on the radio with you in 2017, but you know, when I came in, Bloomington had basically not annexed for 12 years. We started this in 17, 6 years ago, so it's been 18 years since Bloomington did any significant annexation in our community. The neighborhoods have grown a lot. We've got all this built-up area. We can't do things now while the litigation is pending. You can't do voluntary annexation very easily because you can't voluntarily annex while you're in a lawsuit, and you can't voluntarily annex if you're not contiguous to the city. So you've got all these areas next to the city that are not part of the city and developed and under lawsuit. So it's really frustrating. I know we want to get it resolved. So that's why we're trying to proceed with these cases expeditiously. If we were to lose both the cases, I do really worry that Bloomington's future is hampered because you won't even be able to do voluntary annexation in any significant way. And that's not a good thing. Cities need to keep growing. We've talked about that, as their boundaries should reflect the way people are living. And I hope it'll get resolved expeditiously. I don't think all of it will before I'm out of this chair, but I hope it'll get some of it will.
And so the next mayor will have what to do if this goes past 31 December of 2020.
Really just keep you know, pursuing the litigation, though I've had some indications that some of the candidates don't want to do that. I think that's a really terrible tactical choice, but I don't know, but there have been some indications of that, and that's a good issue to talk about in the election, I think. But the new mayor, in my view, can just let the litigation proceed as it should to get it resolved once and for all.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. I see your new city limit welcome signs popping up everywhere. That's interesting, because if this annexation goes through, you're just going to have to move them all again.
You know what's good? We just pick them up and poke them in somewhere else. It's not that big a deal. There are 8 of them up, and 3 more still to come that have a little more state hoops to go through, but we're pleased with that, and I hope people enjoy them. And again, we have little taglines on there with different updates about the city, and maybe one of them be like, you know, Big Ten champ, national champ.
I like that.
Let's go for it. They've got a lot of people looking.
Well, it looks like you can stack them. You can stack them on there. You can add to them if we start
to. It's like admirals with their medals. They can just fill the whole thing up, you know, right?
That's it. Start a new row. Start a new row. We would be remiss to point out that Black History Month wrapped up. Well, it's wrapping up the final day here of February. And a big ceremony Saturday night down at, where was that? Was that at the One World King?
Woolery Mill.
Okay.
Yeah. It was great Saturday night. I got to go there. That was my eighth one of those, too, though we had a little COVID interruption sometimes. But it's a beautiful evening to kind of close it out, celebrate some of our local folks. Living Legend Award winners were Dr. Charlie and Jeanette and Nelms, a wonderful couple who've been here for decades and made such a huge difference. And then some younger people named as leaders of tomorrow. Some wonderful folks honored, and it was really fun. Dancing and good food and fellowship.
Outstanding. And yes, a very busy Black History Month here always in Bloomington, and this year was it was different because, as you mentioned, we've put a lot of the pandemic stuff behind us. That's the good news. We heard on Diane's little news teaser at the top of the hour that it doesn't look like the Taste of Bloomington will be able to put things together. Can the city help that in any way? I know you can't go in and make restaurants make their food or do whatever else, but is there anything to help facilitate making this possible, or in a different way, shape, or form, or is the farmers market your big summer project? What is, if any, role does the city have in big things like this to help the community, if at all?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's a kind of a complicated one. I mean, we sit at the table with Downtown Bloomington Inc., and we help support the Chamber and the Bloomington Economic Development and other places like that to help them facilitate these kinds of things. We are at the table. We do sometimes provide funding, but we often provide coordination. A place like Taste of Bloomington, which is, I love that event. It's like a Lotus, where you have a nonprofit coalition that organizes and makes it happen. It's ultimately it's up to them to decide, because they, there's some risk for them in doing a big event like that, and they're sensitive to that. We are always at the table talking to them about how can we help. You know, direct money is sometimes done, but often we're more on the side of facilitating their operations. We're careful about, trying to pick winners in that kind of thing. A lot of this it evolves, and over time as you build up the support from the community and all that. But, look, we love like Freeze Fest and seeing more events happening. We hate to see an event like this have to get paused again. But I would bet it'll come back next year. We can be a financial partner. We're always a collaborative partner. And it's kind of each one gets worked out as it goes.
Interesting. And sometimes if you have more littler festivals, you don't need to have the big one, so to speak. But that is one heck of a – that is not a small piece of Saturday to put on.
No, it's a lot of work. And, ultimately, sometimes it's not just, hey, it's a shortfall of money. Sometimes it's volunteers and it's just the coordination capacity and risk. Again, if you – what happens if we don't sell as many tickets as we wanted?
Sure.
Who takes it on the chin? And that can be difficult.
And simply, if restaurants can't open 7 days a week, how are they going to be able to staff their brick and mortar and staff that event was, what, 3 to 11? But it was really, 2 days before that, with all your prep, getting it ready, getting your booth put together. It's not as easy as it made to look when you were enjoying it. If, for those of us who've worked that in the past, it is a lot of work. So if you're shorthanded, cost of goods are up and everything else, you don't want to have a festival where you – what has an inflation hit? So then you're like,
that's true too.
It's $10 a bite instead of $3 like it was 5 years ago. Then you get into all that. Yeah. So
– Yeah, and look, it's not easy. We're still recovering from this terrible economic collapse in the pandemic, and we're figuring out new ways to do things, and the workplaces are different, and there's a lot of stress on people. I completely understand if some people just kind of look and say, I just can't add that to my plate this year. Let's take a breather, and that's okay. Let's take care of each other, and we'll you know, deal with change and move forward and be excited about what we do, and hope everybody can keep moving forward.
Excellent job as always, and times will not be any quieter once March hits. We know we'll have a little break for spring break, but plenty of hoops going on, plenty of stuff, and let's just keep this weather going. If we can get, again, we might start tomorrow with a record.
I'm all for that. I might have a sub next week, Mike. I don't know if we've
told you.
I'll figure that out, but since I'm not pitching a perfect game anyway, we'll see.
That's it. Go to the bullpen. Hey, it's early in the season. I don't want your arm to wear out.
Don't blow it out.
That's it. Don't do that. Well, you have fun whatever you're up to. I will not be here the following week because of spring break.
Spring break week.
I will talk to you coming up on the 21st. How about that?
Very good.
Thanks,
everybody,
buddy.
Be well till then. Take care.